And you could put us over the top. Jenka, let me give the number first, 877-500-5266, and tell people that there's volunteers standing by to take your calls, guide you through the process. We recommend kind of a sustaining gift of a certain amount per month, say about $10 per month, $120 a year. You can take that out of your checking account through credit card or debit card. Up to you, and we'll guide you through the process. Call us now, 877-500-5266.
We need four people. No, we need just two people to do that in the next 1 minute in order to reach our... Right now, we got to raise $420, $420 in the next 1 minute. So call if you can do that, 877-500-5266, or maybe $10 a month. And that way you get both the DVD Vultures and Vote Rustlers and the book Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. Just two people picking up that thank you will get us over the top for this hour. So that's two books, both are a book and a DVD, both for Greg Palast. You've been listening about the recount and the vote theft of election 2016. Get the book and DVD that tell you that whole story. $10 a month contribution gets you both. Call now, make it happen, 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-KBOO.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Sunni Thai and Lao Kitchen, 1400 Southeast Stark Street, open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week, up to 9:30 p.m. Sunday through Thursday, and up to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Dinner was provided by Kim Jong Grillin, a Korean barbecue truck and cart on Southeast Division and 46th. Open Monday to Saturday, noon till 8 p.m., and Sunday, noon to 6 p.m.
All right, next up on KBOO Portland, we've got Between the Covers for you. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Saturday Market. Open weekends and daily December 17th through December 24th for the Festival of the Last Minute, offering handmade gifts created by artists from the Pacific Northwest. And is located in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Between the Covers. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. My guest is Alexander Maksik. Alexander Maksik is the author of the novels You Deserve Nothing and A Marker to Measure Drift, which was a New York Times Book Review Notable Book of 2013. His writing has appeared in the Pushcart Prize Anthology, Best American Non-Required Reading, Harper's, Tin House, Harvard Review, The New York Times Magazine, The Atlantic, and Narrative Magazine, among other publications. Today we are talking about his new novel, Shelter in Place. Alexander Maksik, welcome to KBOO Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Your new novel, Shelter in Place, is set in the Pacific Northwest in the early 1990s, mostly.
Yeah.
Joseph, or Joe, or Joey March, is the narrator, looking back to the early 90s when he was in his early 20s and falls in love with a young woman named Tess Wolf. It's also a period of time that he starts to experience the first symptoms of bipolar disorder, and it's also during this time that his mother kills a man in a parking lot and goes to prison. Can you talk a little about how this novel began for you? What was the idea or the germ of this novel?
Yeah, I think the very first germ came to me when I went to college in the Pacific Northwest in Walla Walla, Washington, where, as I'm sure you know, there's a maximum security prison. And while I was there, it was impossible to be unaware of this prison. It was, you know, it lit up the night. The lights were always glowing, and my neighbors were the children and wives of prisoners, and so there was always something a bit haunting about it, and it always served as a kind of reminder that I was essentially a spoiled kid, you know, skipping classes. And so, I mean, that was many, many years ago, and I always wanted to write something about that about that place. Later, it became this character, this kid who is a sort of innocent and who falls wildly in love with a woman who has a tremendous amount of independence and fire and embodies many of the characteristics that we sort of foolishly ascribe to men. So I like the idea of playing with those traditional gender roles, and that's, I guess, that's the beginning of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in Shelter in Place, the prison isn't in sort of the eastern part of the Pacific Northwest.
Right.
It's on the coast.
Yes.
And that tension between the people who work at the prison, the people who teach or are students at the college, and then the others who work in the community, like Joey and Tess do, mm-hmm. is throughout that narration about that
right.
area.
Right. Yeah, I like the idea of playing with these two different worlds and how they are sort of inextricably linked but very clearly separated along class lines, primarily. And you know, you have a family member in prison, your relationship with prison changes dramatically.
Early in the story, Joe begins to experience the symptoms of bipolar disorder. And I'm wondering if you could read a short segment from Shelter in Place that describes this onset of these symptoms.
Sure. The next evening, I drove into Cannon Beach in the rain. And because it was raining, or because I was tired of camping, or because it was getting dark, I paid for a room at a motel. It was too much money, $35 a night or whatever it was, but worth it for the shower, the neatly wrapped soap, the cup sealed in plastic, and the fresh towels and the clean sheets. Then, naked beneath the spray of hot water, an abrupt and inexplicable detonation. A switch thrown. I was overcome by pleasure, by a sense of overwhelming power, rapid rise, sudden swelling euphoria, savage ecstasy, my heart huge. I was absent all fear. I was standing on the bed. I was dressing, the clean shirt like some kind of wonder fabric, making my skin hum. And I left that room pulsing with mysterious rapture, qualities I'd never known. And outside by the Coke machines, I broke the shell and withdrew my body until there was no separation between it and myself, it and the night sky. I put my head down and flew like a fish, all my muscles fast twitch, my bones pure black oil, my blood made of gasoline. There was no cold, there was nothing I could not control. I stretched my arms and legs, arched my liquid back, and sailed. I was a traveler, a man. I had weight and fire. I found a bar and walked inside like some kind of Clint Eastwood cowboy, some fearless hero soldier on leave. I see all of it, from the hot water to the do not disturb sign, to the wet street, to the bar door. The way I began to swing upwards from happiness into something else again and then again, higher, with my eyes all clear and my body humming and my heart ever expanding, something like I'd never felt in my life. No drug had ever come close. Eyes huge. I saw every detail of every surface of every object. The place was full of people, but I glided past them. I was a skier, a dancer, a skater. I ordered a drink I'd never ordered in my life. Beam rocks, I said.
And so we hear this process happening to Joe. And can you talk about why you chose to have this character have bipolar disorder?
I think partly because I have some experience with bipolar disorder. I know people who suffer from the condition, and I thought more generally that it would be an interesting subject for a novel. I think that there is a certain level of bipolarity in writing itself, you know, to maintain an even sense of tone, of even enthusiasm while writing is a very difficult thing to do. And there are days when you are writing and it feels so easy and so fluid, and you feel a sense of power, I think. And there are other days when it feels absolutely impossible. Mm-hmm. And you feel sort of mired in the swamp that Joey describes himself. So for all of those reasons, I think it was interesting to me.
Right. And did you draw on what the people you know with this disorder, did you draw on what they told you about happened to them, or how did you
I did. And I also, to be perfectly candid, have some experience very personally with the disorder. And, you know, I don't suffer from the same extremes that he does, but I am familiar with those feelings of sort of rapid cycling, and at times feeling, like I say, that sense. And often it's, you know, it has to do with writing. Days when I feel very powerful as a writer, and I feel almost, you know, in this exaggerated sense of ability, and other days when it feels that the whole endeavor is a terrible mistake.
Yeah, I think maybe creativity in general has those sort of drastic ups,
sure,
and downs.
Sure, of course. And I think, you know, it's certainly not particular to writers, but I, you know, the majority of my friends are artists of some kind, and all of them, I think, on one level or another, have had experiences like the one I'm describing.
The passage you read, it goes on, and right after the passage that we heard, Joe meets Tess.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting because she meets him right when he's at one of these highs.
Right, right.
And it seems to contribute to his charm.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about those two characters together, a little bit more about Tess herself, and maybe about Joe, too, and how their personalities mesh or not?
Or don't mesh, yeah. I mean, I think there is that coincidence, and frankly, I don't think Joey would agree with me, but it could have been another woman. But because he was in this sort of height of a manic episode, and he, for whatever reason, perhaps just pure physical attraction, he sees this woman, and he goes to her in a way that he has never done before. He's not, before this point, a particularly aggressive or self-confident person. And she is a match for him, or at least she is a match for this version of himself. And I think he likes very much that she is powerful, that she is confident, that she is independent, that she has a kind of intelligence and will that other women that he's known don't have. And his devotion to her, I think, comes from that. And she shares qualities that other women in his life have also possessed. His mother for one, his sister for another. All of the women in the novel are, in one way or another, highly independent, highly intelligent, self-possessed people who are sort of fighters and warriors in the ways that oftentimes, particularly in film and in fiction and television and so on, men are. And he possesses these characteristics that, as I think I mentioned, that are so often foolishly ascribed to women. And so I think it's a combination of all of those things.
Yeah, she gets frustrated with him sometimes for his passivity.
Right, and she leaves him. You know, and so I very, very from the very beginning, I sort of saw him as a kind of princess in her tower, waiting for the knight to return. And he is, you know, sort of cloistered in this house, the very beginning of the book, waiting for the love of his life to return from her ramblings and her, you know, her wars and battles, and much like, you know, in those traditional tales.
I'm speaking with Alexander Maksik. We're talking about his novel, Shelter in Place. You mentioned the other women in his life, his mother, who is a key character, even though she's not in the book a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what happens to his mother, what she does.
She was a nurse and worked in the ER for many, many years, and happened to be in a parking lot in Seattle where she witnesses a man beating his wife and children. And she loses her temper, goes to her car, grabs a hammer, and hits the man with it in defense of this woman and her children. But she doesn't stop. And she continues to hit him, and the man dies, and she goes to prison. And For some people, she becomes a kind of hero, and for others, she's simply another lunatic woman. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of that question, you know, is just what she is. And Joey is trying to work that out himself and is also, of course, given his emotional state or psychological state, is struggling with this idea as to whether or not he has in some way inherited mental illness from his mother. I don't know that it's true that she is mentally ill. I think, you know, a person loses their temper. She has seen the impact of domestic violence in her work as a nurse for years and years and years. At a certain point, I think people lose their tempers, and I don't think that that makes them mad. Mm-hmm. So all of these questions are sort of moving through the book and are problems that Joey has to deal with.
Yes, she becomes a hero or heroine to a group of, it sounds like mostly young women college students at the university that's
right.
in the town.
Right.
And then to Tess.
Yes.
A very crucial element that Tess is quite taken with her
yeah.
as a active person in fighting violence
yes.
against women.
Yeah. I mean, Tess is unlike these women at the college. She has very little patience for quiet activism, and she's a, you know, she sees herself, especially when she's young, as a kind of independent warrior, and she has no patience for conversation, for, you know, for passivity. And I think now in her later years would see what they do, and I won't say what they do, you know, as an act of kind of, you know, the impetuousness of youth and all of that. And she does see Joey's mother as a heroine, as a, I don't know if role model is right, but she's inspired by this older woman. The way I think that when we're young, we can often fall under the spells of people who appear to us, these kind of, you know, larger than life figures who do act in ways that we only hope that we can ourselves.
She doesn't seem to question the act that Anne Marie, the mother, has mm-hmm. committed, whereas Joey has some issues about it, some of which seem to almost be based on his, you know, knowing his mother for a much longer period of time.
Sure.
And but the question always is, well, one or two hits with the hammer are understandable, but
right.
seven
right.
is the thing that seems to push some beyond the sympathy that the others have for what she did.
Yeah, that's right. I think, you know, he adores his mother. I think what he resists in large part is the reduction of this wholly complex human being to a single thing. In many ways, I think Tess is less subtle in her evaluation of this woman. She's known her for far less time than Joey has, and she also makes her what she wants her to be, mm-hmm. and Joey can't do that. And the idea, the terror of one's mother becoming a single thing, I think it's too much for him. And especially someone like him, who is on one level, I think, quite sophisticated in his ability to see people for their mini selves, particularly as he is starting to understand himself as mini selves. But on the other hand, he's a kind of innocent and refuses to see too much darkness in the people that he loves.
One of the aspects of the novel that was interesting to me is that a lot of it takes place in bars. There's a lot about bar culture.
Yeah.
Did you know that already, or how did you?
Yes. Yeah, I worked as a bartender for a long time, and in restaurants for even longer. I worked as a sous chef, and I worked as a dishwasher and a prep cook, and as a bartender for quite a long time. And it's a world that I have a lot of respect for. It's work that I have a great deal of respect for. There's so much going on in a restaurant, and the sort of upstairs, downstairs, you know, behind the scenes aspects of it. But I also think there's a real artistry to bartending well or waiting tables well. It's hugely physical work. It's to be done well, it requires a real talent. And I like to write about professions and worlds that are not often explored, at least in contemporary fiction, or at least in my, you know, narrow reading of contemporary fiction. And there's so much drama there, and the families that are sort of created amongst servers and bartenders, and, you know, the sort of power dynamics and who kind of has the power in a given restaurant, and all of that, you know.
Right.
It's always a sort of, it's a small world, and it's a fascinating one.
That sort of, after the closing,
yeah,
and that kind of coming together of people who are really the only ones up at that time of night or whatever that pulls them together,
yeah,
at that time.
Yeah, sure. And it's, you know, it's sort of it's almost like a post-game feeling, you know, after a team has played whatever sport, you know, at the end, it's a shared experience. And I mean, it's a stretch, but, you know, there's something of, and there's a lot of, you know, war and soldier imagery in this book. And that's intentional because I always felt that way, you know, when you have, especially in restaurants where the service is very important, you know, the sort of the kind of perfection of the service is really important. You know, the managers give pep talks, and you go out and you do this thing, and you try to do it really well. And there are nights when it feels seamless, and there's a kind of beauty and almost balletic aspect of it. And then there are other nights when it just feels disastrous, much like, you know, much like writing, much like making art, much like doing much of anything, really.
Right. In fact, that when you mentioned the war imagery, Tess, at one point, says she wants to go to war.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she does. I think she's, you know, she's so full of impatience and anger, and a kind of that sort of aspecific anger one feels when they're young and paying attention to the world. And she's just, you know, I think we all know people like that, or some of us were people like that, when, you know, you're 21, 22 years old and you are just on fire, and you're not even certain what it is you want to do, but you just want to tear down the walls, and you're so alive. And I think she is particularly passionate, and she's looking for a way to use that passion. And as is often the case, you know, circumstances provide answers to those questions.
I'm speaking with Alexander Maksik. We're talking about his book, Shelter in Place, on Between the Covers. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. Tess, she's not an easy character, but the family that, yep, she's hooked up with is very difficult.
Yes.
At some point, as a reader, you kind of wonder, you know, how long can she last?
Yeah. How, you mean Tess?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not very long.
Uh-huh.
And I don't, you know, I'm not giving, right, giving it away. And again, I think, you know, there's a time when that kind of dysfunction is sexy. Mm-hmm. To certain people, you know. I mean, I remember being that age and being drawn to dysfunction and drawn to, you know, to dramatic relationships, and it made me feel as if my life was somehow more romantic. And then you grow up and you discover that it's just sort of unpleasant and not a very nice way to live. And so I think Tess is seduced by the drama. I mean, it is a very dramatic family of a bipolar son and a woman in prison, and, you know, and a disappeared sister. And I think she associates herself with all of this and takes on, in a certain way, the identity of the family as her own. But later, she's simply exhausted by this man who is so erratic and refuses help. And I think, you know, in my experience, that is often what happens to us. You know, what is exciting and romantic when we are young is exhausting and depressing when we're older.
And you mentioned the sister, Claire,
yeah,
who's kind of a ghost-like figure in, yeah, this novel, because she opts out very early.
She does, yeah. I think she's a ghost-like figure for Joey, mm-hmm, who misses her. He doesn't want to hate her, whereas other people, I think, would hate her. We demand explanations for those kinds of disappearances, I think, far more frequently from women than we do men. And Joey, I think, is struggling to simply allow her, as is his father, the freedom to make the choice she wants to make. And he can, you know, he doesn't write her off ever. And in many ways, the book or the story, he's writing to her, and he's writing to these people who are lost, who have abandoned him, or, you know, have somehow separated from the family. He's gentle in that way. You know, he refuses, like his father, to be furious, to sort of shelter in fury, to sort of find comfort in anger, in hating these people who have disappointed him.
Just to get back to the issue of violence against women that is strong in the book.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, you know, if you had a commitment to that issue in some way that is outside of the writing about it in this book, or
a commitment in terms of some sort of activism.
Yeah.
No, but it's something that has always made me very, very angry. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's made me angry and has, I suppose, frightened me as well from a really young age. And I don't know exactly where that comes from, aside from having a mother who is so fierce and independent and intelligent. The women I know, my friends, are fortunately very independent, engaged people who have taught me a great deal about the experience of being a woman. And, you know, maybe to reduce it just to a single thing, it's that I've always hated bullies. And all of my books, I think, to some extent or another, deal with the abuse of power and bullying.
Well, Alexander Maksik, I want to thank you so much for coming into KBOO and talking about Shelter in Place.
Thank you for having me.
Alexander Maksik has been my guest. And just so you know, his last name is spelled M-A-K-S-I-K. We're on Between the Covers on KBOO Radio. If you missed any part of this interview or want to hear it again, you can go to kboo.fm later today, and it will be available at kboo/Between the Covers. This is Kathleen Stevenson.
Kathleen, thanks very much. This is Ken. I'm with Janka, and you're listening right now to our KBOO 3-day holiday membership drive. This is the last day. Ends tonight at midnight. And Janka, we're almost at our goal, but we've got a little bit to go.
And I urge you to call right now, because during this show, Between the Covers, in the next 4 minutes, you can double the impact of your donation without any extra money out of your pocket. How? An anonymous donor in honor of Kathleen Stevenson, who just retired from KBOO, who you were just listening to, has made a very generous offer to match the next $250 in donations called in during Between the Covers. That means right now, in the next 4 minutes, the next 3.5 minutes, you can double the impact of your gift by calling 877-500-5266. That means if you can give $50, KBOO gets $100. If you can give $250, KBOO will get $500. If you are able to do $10 a month, that counts as $120 toward that match. If you can give $20 a month, that counts as $240, and that will be matched and be $480 for KBOO. So do call right now, whether you could just pledge to give an amount every month, or maybe you could do a one-time contribution. Whatever it is, do it now. KBOO news and talk programs emphasize controversial, neglected perspectives. We keep you informed about what's going on in your community, and we encourage exploration to radical approaches to problem solving. Like you were just listening to that author talking about bipolar disorder and the ways that his characters approach it. And that is a local author, and that's what you hear on KBOO. That's what you support with your dollars, whether you could give $5 or $10 a month. Do it now. 877-500-5266. Let's make those phones ring and reach our goal. We want to thank Martha in Southwest Portland, Corey in Southeast Portland, Sasha of Finns LLC in Southeast Portland, who loves Democracy Now! They gave online, kboo.fm.
I'd also like to thank Shannon. Shannon actually gave an extra gift to KBOO in addition to his membership. Brian renewed in Southeast, and Mary, a new member in Hillsboro. Cenk, I want to mention the new members right now. We have two matching funds in effect.
All right.
If you're not currently a KBOO member and you become one. Say it's $10 a month, $120 a year. KBOO, thanks to the generous matching fund, both by Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding, and that anonymous donor in honor of Kathleen Stevenson.
So we get $360.
Yes,
if you
exactly.
Give $10 a month.
We'll
wow.
Get $30 a month, $360 wow. A year. You just pay the $10 a month. So it's the perfect time to become a KBOO member. If you've been sitting on the fence, you've been thinking about it, call now, 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm, and new member gifts are tripled.
Wow. Now is the time to band together. You know, other media outlets normalize exclusion, group thinking. Here at KBOO, we encourage communication, the sharing of unheard perspectives. We talk about diversity, not just talk about it. We are about it here at KBOO. It's a very essential part of who we are. We're about to have Black Book Talk on the air. And in the next 1 minute, we want to reach that goal. And we want to double that money with the $250 match right now.
So give us a call at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. This morning, a friend sent me a sign on a local business, which I thought was just perfect for KBOO. And I'm going to try to find it here for a second. Here it is. This was on a local business when she was taking a walk yesterday. "We welcome all races, all religions, all countries of origin, all sexual orientations, all genders. We stand with you. You are safe here." That was that storefront in Portland, but it's also KBOO as a community radio station. You're safe here. You're here. You'll hear viewpoints. You'll hear people like Greg Palast, Steve Rosenthal that you heard this morning that you won't hear any place else.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly.
And Chris Andre was saying this morning that we are a sanctuary radio right here. We're a sanctuary on the airwaves for all of the people who are pushed out, who are being pushed down and trying right now to be silenced, as you heard about Consortium News and this this watch list of alternative media that's being considered so-called fake news because it's actually telling the truth. And so when the iron fist comes out of the velvet glove, that's the time to stand together and to be a part of your community radio station. Whether you can come and volunteer, whether you can come down and see us and give a contribution, or whether you can call. Our address, by the way, is 20 Southeast 8th. And if you want to come down, we are right here. We'll show you around. You can see our humble operation where we stretch every dollar that we get.
Our palatial studio.